Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. This is the 51st episode. It's a little bit of a midweek wrap. Well, we've been between the holidays and working, and one of us not feeling that well, but we're here against better judgment, whether it's dedication or just mere stupidity, to be doing a podcast with about, well, collectively pounds of food in my belly. Everyone is falling asleep, yet we must drive on and get a podcast done. You know, I figured if we can do a podcast after Turkey Day, or literally like day of Turkey Day, then any podcast is possible under any circumstance. Anyway, I hope everyone's Thanksgiving went well. For those of you who are abroad and listening to this, well, it's Thanksgiving in the United States. So whatever that is to you, happy Thanksgiving anyway. Listen, if you want more of us, go to modstate.com. On the top of the website, you'll find a icon bar that will link you to all of our social media pages. You can also find me at NateWelline_modstate. You can also find links to the podcast on my Facebook, which is Nate Welline. You can also find us on podomatic.com and on iTunes and anywhere else you find your podcasts. We appreciate your word of mouth and sticking around. We've exceeded the 50th episode mark. This is our 51st episode. We really appreciate y'all sticking around, and I hope that everyone's having a good holiday week. Let's get this started.
You want the envelope? There. You take it. It's all yours. You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass, you nincompoop.
Hey man, what's going on?
Back here with you tonight.
Yeah, man. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's good to be back with you, sir.
Yeah, indeed. After pounds of food and, man, I'm stuffed, but I got my second win, so we're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, even today of all days, I didn't eat very much, but I think I'm one of the only ones. But, you know, it's a good holiday to do that, though.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was cooking the turkeys, and like I just decided I was going to be gluttonous. I didn't care. It's like, whatever, man.
Why not?
You feeling better?
I am feeling a bit better. It's been a weird month. You and I normally are not prone to illness. We're usually two pretty resilient people, but I suppose there's been a lot going on. I mean, I'm moving around like a gypsy as usual, but it seems like we've both kind of been a little hamstrung by flu-like symptoms.
Man, it's been weird. I've never had this bout of sickness that has gone this long, and it's never been just awful. It's just been persistent. I don't know.
That's the thing. It's a sort of general malaise that is just persistent. And it's like every other day it seems like I'm running fever. It's weird.
I don't know. Well, either way, we grind it out, so it's what
We're back. I mean, we've certainly shown our resilience. One day, when it's more pertinent to do a making of series, maybe in April, that we've talked about doing it for the 2-year mark.
Yeah,
it might be, and especially as we go more and more into multimedia and we embrace video. I think it maybe as time rolls on, it'll be more pertinent. But we really have endured a series of crises here. We've come through. None of them were self-manufactured.
No.
We have to say that nowadays, given certain levels of leadership, shall we say, in society.
Indeed. Well, we'll get into that for sure.
Lots of synthetic crises.
Indeed. Well, I'm glad that you got some time with the family, and I did too.
You too. Your parents surprised you all the way from Detroit City?
Yeah, man. It's great to have them here, and they're spending a little bit of time between my sister and and myself, so we'll link up on Saturday and head up to one of the national parks. And yeah, they're kind of making a tradition out of it. And
yeah, I'm glad to hear they made it in safely. Haven't been to Denver in a while. Haven't been to Detroit in an even longer period of time. But I like both places, both metropoli, as we found out we can say.
Yes, metropoli. I was I cooked two turkeys today, and I used the I for plural for carcai instead of carcasses. Probably not appropriate, but whatever.
Well, you right there, that right there was God's work, my friend.
Thanks. Yeah, I think so. I'll take
strong
that.
Work.
Thanks. So this is the midweek wrap. We are back, and I don't know. There's been a few things that have happened. We've had some conversation, and we'll get into probably we'll spill over into spill into Friday's podcast as well. So you're gonna hear a narrative running through these two podcasts. I think I'm still yet to find a good synonym that I like. Honestly,
There's a bunch you can use, of course. To delineate from that term if you wanted to, but hey, it's your word, it's a signature. We both have our various signatures we use, and there's worse words to be known for.
I suppose you're right. I try to eliminate like as much as I can and but I'm still pretty good at it. So
we've both come a long way with this. I mean, really screwed up there. I had appeared as a guest on a podcast a few times before, but this was the first time for both of us in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Either or, it could have been that way with either of us hosting it, but when we went, all right, we're going to hand the reins off this to Mr. Welline, we knew, obviously, that you were highly intelligent. You were now not only just member of the editorial staff, but a partner. But as far as hosting this, I knew you were going to do well. No insult to you, I didn't know how well. I didn't know it was going to be this well. And far and away, we all have been blown away by your performance here. And so,
thanks. Narrative,
it's, hey, you know what? At least you're not known for saying bigly.
That's true. I did.
That is a word.
I had to laugh when I was.
It is a word.
It is. And I don't say it. Thank goodness. There. So I went back and I was thinking of several of the solo podcasts that I did. And I remember early on, I would just stop, re-record, or cut, delete, because I would go through these moments where I would have nothing to say and I would fill it with like and when I couldn't articulate what I was trying to say. But even funny, a moment in the previous podcast where I linked in or spliced in a series of the podcasts that we did. And I used a term, I think it was during one of the podcasts where we just hit a rut and we couldn't move past. I think it was with you, Nate, and I. And I used the word, or I used the phrase, we don't take ourselves very serious. What did I say? I used the word seriously. We don't take this, whatever it was, I used seriously when I should have used serious. And it was a horrible blatant error, and I had to laugh. I listened to it a couple times, but.
Hey, you know, one of the big things, and I know I say, you know, I know I say, well, I went back and I'm going, how many times have I started off a statement here with, well, and if you watch punditry on television, for instance, a lot of them do that when they're asked, what do you think about such and such? They start off with, well, and there's nothing wrong. We're not trying to be grammar snobs here. I see what you're getting at, but this is, and I found this out, this isn't to stroke my own ego or to stroke yours. I found out the hard way just how tough it can be starting your own podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, there I said it again, you know, there is no framework upon which to base it. It's yours. No. Unless you intend to completely cop something from someone else, which we didn't want to do. It's very difficult to do. There's no framework. And as we've gone on, we've gotten and we've sought and we've received it as constructive, a brutally honest constructive criticism as we could get, not only from readership, but some of the most brutal was from members of my own family and members of our own staff. But that's what we wanted. And slowly but surely, that's how things got better. For instance, we got some critiques on the way we did the intro, and we immediately made those changes and we were the better for it.
Yeah,
so
I think so.
It's interesting when there's different, media outlets, and I've been a part of this before as well, where it's like out of pride, I don't want to change what I'm doing. But with this, because we've been so unafraid to embrace change, I can honestly say we've been the better for that. Mm-hmm. And the product, the rate at which this has improved, mm-hmm. I would challenge anybody to go back to episode one and then listen to through episode 50. Don't even listen to date. I mean, the exponential amounts with which we've improved, mm-hmm. in my personal opinion, it's in stark contrast with any podcast I've listened to date.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether we've done it or not, the light years.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you brought up the first podcast, because I remember you told me, hey, look, once you hit that record button, the conversations that we have over the phone, there's something about that red button that just stops you in your tracks. And I've got a buddy that wants to start a podcast, so I'm going to help him do it, and I'll push it out later. But I said, you know, we really need to sit down, and you got to hear yourself in the mic. You've got to see the red record button hit, and you've got to work through it, because you will hit these roadblocks, these like mental roadblocks and obstructions in your head because of what you're putting out as quality and as your product. And it's just completely different from talking on the phone, regardless of the fact that it is pretty much the same thing. I mean, we don't really change our conversation that much, maybe drop less F-bombs on the podcast than we may do in our conversations pre-show.
Perhaps.
But yeah, anyway.
When you and I also, you and I kind of realized this I don't remember at which point, but we talked about this before a podcast, and I think we ended up talking about it on it. But I remember my father saying, are you sure that the two of y'all never had these types of conversations ever? And I stopped and I went, no, Dad, you know what? You're absolutely right. Because we had, you know, I called it I had a phrase that I used for it. I said, we had a sort of poor man's salon in the locker room at Walter Reed. And then when we all would gather at your house or at mine in Rockville, Maryland, mm-hmm. we really had that. It was in the classical sense of salon, we would all get together for drinks. There was no productive reason for it, if you will, as far as we weren't putting out a product. We were all members of the military, but we would talk about these sorts of things and have, or you know, sort of structured, organized debates and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And it really was a sort of preparation for what we're doing now.
Oh,
and it is different. I feel like, excuse me, I feel like I was doing the best thing by telling you that record button was there, but it's mm-hmm. it's no different than when, as a sophomore in high school, I was a timekeeper for debate rounds, and mm-hmm. I watched, and I thought, well, all three of my older siblings did this, were successful doing this. Hey, this is no problem. I've sat in on so many rounds. It's a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
You're standing there in that suit, and you got to go up to the podium in a room full of, there's judges, and there's audience members, but also in between their rounds, your peers are sitting in there watching you.
Mm-hmm. It's completely different. It is. It'll be interesting when we add a video element to this, and I could imagine it
very soon.
I could imagine it's almost like an actor who's never been on, like their first time on a set, and they hit the record button, 3, 2, 1, action, and you just freeze up. And if you've got lines, it's one thing. I mean, it's exponentially easier when you have notes in front of you to keep a framework. But I found the second on my solo podcast, the second that I went noteless, oh man, it just crumbled. And
well, the one that I did was noteless, and it was abysmal.
Well,
and there's a reason. We've gotten feedback in a plurality of our feedback has indicated we're better together, and you certainly were better solo than I was, but it's definitely, it's one of those things where it's a yin and yang. Even when we don't disagree,
mm-hmm.
we just have some, but I think you're going to see this definitely with the video version of the podcast. I've never heard them widely called video casts, so I really don't know.
We'll figure it out.
But I think you're going to see that it's an added element, but I think that our listenership, our readership, our overall audience is going to appreciate it, because there's certain nuances of discussion, obviously, that's not conveyed when you don't see mm-hmm. people's. It's like 70% of communication, I think we've agreed, is nonverbal.
Exactly.
So we started doing a podcast, and that's one of the things, the biggest thing that was difficult for me in becoming in forensics. So I'm sorry to go on about this at such length, but high school debate, forensics, for whatever reason, I don't know how the word forensics came to be used, not, but yeah. It is. But my brother was of a very, he was my first coach. And it sounds like, oh, that's nepotism. Well, he's 12 years older than me, and he and both of my older sisters had been national champions in the NFL and CFL leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And no, this for everyone that's not football, that's national and Catholic forensic leagues, mm-hmm. respectively. But so when I had him as a coach, it was quite good but brutal constructive criticism.
Yeah.
And one of his big things, why this is relevant to us doing the video cast, is watching your facial expressions, because he was a believer in, for instance, what you saw in the presidential debates, it would pick a party. But this business of, and the Democrats certainly did better, Hillary and Bernie actually had some civil discourse and actual policy debates. I was proud of them. But the Republicans, for example, making faces at the other person, mm-hmm. scoffing at them. My brother, more than likely, if he didn't severely dock you, I mean, he would have severely docked the people on speaker points, but my brother would have stopped around for some of that stuff. This business, so, you know, it was, he coached me, you know, have a stoic facial expression when you're listening to them. Don't mock their argument with your gestures, whatever. And I probably took it a little far because people thought, you know, does he have any emotion when I wasn't sitting there speaking? But it's a different ballgame, and you'll see that I know you can imagine, but once we actually start doing a video, it's different.
Well, it's funny you bring up facial expressions, because Donald Trump, I mean, they literally make GIFs or GIFs or whatever you want to call it, and memes out of the facial expressions that he had during the debates. I mean, he was probably...
The word unprofessional does not begin to describe his performances in those debates. I don't care how big of a fan you are of him, any of that. If he had made it through a whole round of debate, and that's a big if, because me as a judge, I would have stopped it.
Well, yeah, and there's very little articulation. Anybody,
I don't know if you read, I didn't do it for the Republican debates because there's such a non-format there, but I did an actual, as best as possible, flowed and did a scorecard for all three of the presidential debates, as in he and Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of them, I rendered a double loss as my verdict. And I explain it quite well. And now, if I'd had a gun held to my head and said, no, you're not going to give a double loss, you're going to award a victor, all three of those debates would have been won by Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She was the only one of the two that attempted to stay on topic and to actually argue policy. But that's also a big reason why she lost. She attempted to fight with rules against someone for whom there were no rules.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but
I don't
remember. Those debates were a farce.
I don't remember. I think it was Sam Harris on his podcast actually did, and I'm picking on Trump here, but he actually read a transcript of a unscripted speech that Donald Trump gave, and it doesn't matter what the context was, but he literally read it word for word, and there was nothing of substance. In fact, the articulation of it was so I don't even have a word for it.
The closest thing I heard it compared to was a stream of consciousness rant, because
that's a good description.
It's as if, all right, when you have phone conversations with people, and you and I do this, and I know people are going to find this very cute, but we know, we've been talking together in these type settings, even if not recorded, for over 6.5 years now, or well over 6 years now. And you and I sometimes will kind of finish one another's thoughts, and we do it to a certain degree on the podcast, but there's certain things where when you see transcripts of conversations, you would never write it that way in a book or a movie script. It's not done that way because it's incomplete. And for instance, we'll refer to something. And we're finishing a thought that was mentioned earlier, but it's never actually elongated. It's never elaborated upon for the audience. He does that in a regular speaking style.
By himself.
It's impossible. It really is a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, I think that's the best description I've ever heard.
I'm not trying to be rude.
No, but it's true. I mean, when he went back and read that speech, only him, no one asking him questions. It literally was a stream of consciousness. It was like a loose, it's some weird rant that never came full circle.
You started to say lucid dream.
I was. I mean, I don't know if that his speech has ever been my lucid dream, but it just the lack of full circle articulation is just horrific. But anyway, we digress.
This isn't to kind of round that off though for our audience. We have been very fair to the president, and both of us have done so. And I know that you're more progressive, more center left, and I'm by no means, again, it'd be a hell of an argument to peg me as a conservative, but I've felt compelled to do so because so much of the media has not been fair to him. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned multiple sides of his policies. We've also mentioned, for instance, things he's been accused of before president that he was never even charged. You know, we've gone out of our way to say this is hearsay. So we want to make it clear to those perhaps just joining us, this is not an anti-Trump podcast. We are very far from that. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if this was President Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or Barack Obama, we'd be having the same conversation. But this is...
His speaking style is a double-edged sword, okay, because part of it, that is how he related to a lot of common people, and that's not me saying that the common person is stupid or inarticulate.
No, it's not, but I mean, just
related to his very informal, shall we say, speaking style.
Very informal.
And it's very difficult to parse in a professional sense.
Yeah.
That's all we're getting at.
Yeah, exactly. So,
with that,
we had a list of topics I think we wanted to hit, and again, we'll bleed over into the Friday podcast as well, but we started discussing an interesting topic when it comes to icons that we've had over the past, I don't know, just say half century, starting in the 50s. And as many people know, Charles Manson passed away this week, and quite frankly, good riddance, I suppose. And I was just thinking to myself, who we choose as a population to idolize and popularize. And I went back and started reading the history of Charles Manson, and I was just intrigued at the amount of influence he had in popular culture over, you know, when he started, I mean, really when he entered the scene and recoined Helter Skelter and became friends with one of the, oh my goodness, from the Beach Boys.
The Beach Boys.
Yeah, and... Well, one of the lead singers from the Beach Boys.
It was Brian Wilson's, his relative. The guy's last name was Wilson. I don't know if his brother or what.
So they became friends. And, of course, he had this string of murders. And he should have went to... Well, he had a death sentence. Essentially, it was overturned when California Supreme Court ruled that they would...
It was unconstitutional.
It was not constitutional for the death penalty. And he spent the rest of his life in prison.
Apparently, Ronald Reagan, as governor, executive ordered the change in that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there. But somehow or another, the death penalty was only unconstitutional in California for like 5 or 6 years. But the way it works is just because they reinstated it, didn't grandfather him back in there. So, thankfully, the taxpayers got to support this fiend.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it got me thinking about those people that we idolize in this nation, I guess world rather. And of course we idolize good people, we idolize celebrities, and then we idolize these type of individuals that have a great influence on our popular culture. And we started going down the list. I mean, you brought up Darth Vader and from Star Wars, obviously a fictional character that is I guess you'd say almost like an analogy to any sort of regimes that we've had, namely, you know, the Nazi party and Adolf Hitler. And you brought it up. You're like, man, we dress in Halloween costumes. We dress as this individual when we go to see the new Star Wars movie that's been, released or on gaming. Well, obviously that the big gaming debacle with EA right now, but you can go in and become that character and play that character.
There was The Force Unleashed.
Yep.
Were two games that you only played in part of it, but the whole point was following in the steps of his mentor. And then there was a character you could play as Darth Vader in the Soul Calibur fighting games. And then again, there's a, I don't know if it's been made official yet, but there's been a huge call for a Darth Vader side story movie, as if the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy didn't focus enough on Anakin Skywalker. I mean,
and again, the question is begged to be asked, how does this affect culture in a whole? Is
we won't pick on Star Wars. We'll pan out here.
Yeah, I guess you brought up the, as we went on with this conversation, you said, well, look at the TV show Dexter, where you have a serial killer who you essentially fall in love with as a character, yet he,
by design.
By design, of course. And it puts you in a moral conundrum, if you will, because he's technically killing people who are evil in society's light anyway. So it creates this issue where you're essentially rooting for the bad guy to kill bad guys. And I guess if you're trying to think of the lesser of two evils, killing good people versus killing bad people, you're going to pick killing bad people, right? But,
right.
You know, it just makes you wonder what effect this has in overall society. I'm not suggesting that watching Dexter or enjoying Star Wars and Darth Vader or reading up on Charles Manson will essentially breed some sort of new scum of the earth that want to somehow create a narrative in their own life pertaining to these individuals.
No, that's not at all what you were trying to say, and I didn't take it that way, but it does stand to reason. It is poignant if you look at our society with what we focus on, what we obsess over. And it comes down to something, a phrase that's not, I haven't really heard it used in the popular presses since the late 90s arguments over video game violence. You know, that was a big thing for a while there. If anybody remembers, it was Senator Cole and Senator Joseph Lieberman. Mm-hmm. It was a big, I'm picking on a couple, but this was a big deal for a long time. And it kind of disappeared, but it's a phrase known as dollar voting. And basically, if you look at what is best-selling in music, you look at what is best-selling in movies, what are the hit TV shows, you start getting a big picture in this country of a seeming obsession with villainry.
Yeah, and...
Or villainy, excuse me.
Yeah, and those things that are explicit in nature. I mean, there was, I think it was Tipper Gore made the campaign at the time, and Eminem actually references it in a lot of his songs, and where you go after the individual that has some sort of, it just depends on in what camp you stand, but some level of disgust and what is the word, like depravity? I'm not even going to say it. Yes, exactly, depravity. And look, I'm trying to expand my vocabulary. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You're very hard on yourself. You're trying to do this under pressure, but the great issue here is not, you know, we're not picking on Charles Manson, and we're not, God knows, we're not going the route of some individuals who picked on the Beatles. You know, Helter Skelter, for those not in the know, was not written to Charles Manson to incite him to start a race war.
No.
That nut job took that from that. You know, I went and watched a decent chunk of the first ever nationally broadcast criminal trial in this country, the murder trial of Ted Bundy, okay? We're obviously not saying these things are wrong, but if you look again at the greater, in the grand scheme of things, the dollar voting that goes on, maybe we're not picking on Star Wars, we're not picking on Dexter, but there is a massive obsession with darkness. I mean, I've made this point before. Has America become, for so long, have we so long been obsessed with post-apocalyptic worlds that we're almost trying to make that materialize, make that happen?
Yeah, I wonder if... So when the argument came out that video games would incite violence, and that might be the cause for things like Columbine shootings. I mean, I think they probably made that link back in the day. You know, as a kid, I looked at that and said, I think this is ridiculous. I play GoldenEye on Sega Genesis or Nintendo 64, and I'm not having any dreams of going in and shooting individuals at random with my own judicial oversight. But I do see where a certain camp or groups of people would look at this and say, really what that's doing is perpetuating a negative portion of what human nature is. And I think there was a pushback to limit the amount of quote-unquote darkness that you would see because it might perpetuate this negative nature of human nature. And I think it still remains to be seen. I don't know there's any sort of landmark study out there that shows that watching violence or playing violent video games or listening to violent music somehow incites violence. I don't think that's the case.
No, we have found some things, though. We've had several decades now to look at, because let's get real here. The original, you know, games like Pong and Donkey Kong, they weren't as graphic in nature because the graphics weren't that good.
Yeah, exactly.
So now it's only been since 1996 that, I mean, GoldenEye blew people away, and then there was Perfect Dark, and then Halo obviously took it to another level. So we've only really had two full decades of well-animated 3D violence. And one study that did come out has shown, and this is a study, but it has shown that people that engage in these video games long-term do tend to show more aggressive tendencies. But my question upon reading this analysis, of course, was, do these video games cause them to be more aggressive, or do more aggressive people play them?
And that's true. I mean, you know, even taking into account if you're playing 6 to 8 hours of video games and you're not walking around outside and burning energy, that could somehow create a more aggressive individual. I mean,
right.
Dare I make
entertainment here.
No, I mean, dare I make the analogy that if you cage up some sort of animal and they don't get their free range that they're supposed to get, that they would have some sort of pent-up aggression. I don't think that's an unfair analogy to make.
As a cat person who was raised in a family of cat people, okay, I can assure you they are natural-born predators that need exercise, even if they're not trying to kill a rat, some other form of... You keep a cat, sweet animal, okay? All of our, you know, we've raised them to be sweet animals. You know, I people say they're mean. Well, they're mean if you raise them to be mean.
Yeah, anything. But dog too.
Kept caged up though. This sweet little feline I have out here, if he's not allowed to get any sort of exercise or whatever, and then you go in and try and play with him while he's been caged up, he's probably pissed off and try and bite you.
Right? It's just,
I mean,
pushing that energy somewhere. I mean, it's
so, is it because I tried to play with him, or that the cat was irritated, or was he irritated because he needed to get out and stretch and be a cat for a little while?
Exactly. And I think this creates a bit of a camp situation that we got into a little bit over pre-show. And it's this idea where we have to allow for the freedom to explore these parts of our human nature. And then there's the other side that says, look, why explore it if we know that it's inherently negative, and why not push back on that? And it got us into this interesting conversation of not really morality, but the idea of, you know, we look at the relevance, and this might be a stretch if you're listening to this, like, oh my goodness, how do we get to this? But
we'll fill in the gaps. We always do.
Yeah, we'll definitely try to. That you create, so obviously we understand that this nation's rather pitted against one another on a number of topics, but
it's... Go ahead and say it.
Well, I mean, we'll just take, if you
we
want...
We are tribal.
Yeah, we are tribal. And that goes into whether or not you believe that two of people of the same gender can be married, whether that's abortion or that's gun rights. And it's this idea that if your views don't line up with said individual, like if your views don't line up with my views, somehow your basis for morality or how you view the current world is somehow wrong, or you don't have the same moral basis than that I do. And it really cuts to the core at a really fundamental level that creates frustration on either side. And I don't know if that's a stretch to make or not, because that's going straight to a huge topic of morality and where morality comes from. But I think one thing that we found, you know, just you and I having these conversations, is that even though we disagree maybe fundamentally on something like the Second Amendment, just because you have your views and I'm not coming out and saying, well, then you somehow are okay with mass shootings and domestic terrorism, and therefore, because you don't agree that we need more regulation, you're allowing these things to happen, and somehow your moral compass and moral conscience
is complicit.
Off. You're complicit. And again, we're making this stretch from like Manson and video games to this idea of morality, but
it's quite relevant.
But if you do take that that idea that I just proposed, you can push that back to when video games came out and when Eminem dropped his first couple albums and there was outrage and pickets and riots against that type of stuff that was being pushed out. And it was this idea that if you agreed with that, somehow your moral compass and your moral conscience was not in line. And you essentially create these camps and you pit people against one another. And maybe that's some sort of organized chaos at a higher level that's, you know, tinfoil hat, that's what they want. But I don't think it does a service at all to the greater society to somehow believe that your moral compass is askew, if you will, or on the wrong heading because you just agree or believe in a certain topic that the other side may not agree with. And I think that's why the conversations that you and I have can be incredibly problematic for people to have with one another. Like over Thanksgiving, you have families that literally won't have Thanksgiving with one another because someone voted for Donald Trump, or politics aren't brought up at the table because it just becomes a shouting match. And it really gets down to the meat that because you voted for someone like Donald Trump, or because you voted for someone like Hillary Clinton, you inherently, your moral constitution is in question. And when you question people about these things, when you call people out on something as fundamental as their moral conscience and their moral outline for life, that creates an environment that's so negative for conversation. And again, I think over the last 50-some podcasts that we've done, we've allowed one another to realize that our moral compass and what we want, though we might disagree on certain things, doesn't change. We still want the same thing. And regardless of whether or not you find your moral compass from religion and I find my moral compass from another source, they're not different. They're still the same thing. They're still the same foundation of morality. And I mean, obviously, don't murder, don't lie, don't steal, don't cheat. These are things that are interwoven in everyone's moral outline, and to just attack that because of something that you agree with is going to create chaos in the conversation that you're going to have, whether that's with your friends, whether that's with a neighbor, whether that's over Thanksgiving dinner. And why people don't even come to the table with the people they love, because they don't want to have these conversations, as opposed to just having a reasonable argument that you and I are having. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
You raise several massive issues and make strong points about them. And I was sitting here listening to you and recalling the numerous podcasts that we've done together and all of the conversations we've had over the years. And a thought occurred to me. I thought, you know, our relationship, if we thought, compared to that of society and most conversations that people have or don't have, as you put it, because of their disagreements, our relationship would not even function out in the real world, no. If you will, because they would hear us talking and people would probably in public shut us down, be like, what is they probably think something was wrong with us. But mm-hmm. if you think of our relationship and the way it's been, we've talked about some pretty acerbic topics, some caustic things over the years, but especially since July 16th when we started this podcast. And it certainly, I think, has done nothing but improve our friendship. And it certainly mm-hmm. has improved this podcast to do this. And I hope, really hope that it has improved. I'm not going to go so far as to say the lives yet of our listeners. Probably over years it will. As, I mean, anything that you put in, and that's kind of where I'm going with this, it has certainly helped, I hope, the overall thought processes. If nothing else, perhaps our readership, our listenership feels a bit more informed. If mm-hmm. nothing else, not that we're, you know, these two very enlightened individuals, but if nothing else, maybe we've given you something to think about a little differently. And that kind of brings me to this whole, when you put something in long enough, you know, what you put in invariably it has something to do with what comes out.
Not exactly.
Playing Halo means you're going to be the super marine, okay? But at the end of the day, I'm sure that playing first-person shooters gives you better reflexes.
Sure.
That much has been shown from video games.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I think to a certain degree, yeah, if you didn't put anything in but, let's say, Darth Vader, Ted Bundy, Dexter, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, at some point, yeah, there's going to be some probably dark elements of your personality that are enhanced. And I don't know what the metric is. I don't know what the perfect balance is. As you know, Nate, you and I both are kind of like this in our different areas, but you and I are pretty balanced people. I mean, yeah, we like soccer, we like our rock and roll, but you also like reading Immanuel Kant. I also have read, yeah, the last year I told you I've read the book The Master and Margarita, which mm-hmm. is the Russian novel that inspired Mick Jagger to write the lyrics for Sympathy for the Devil. You know, the devil's mm-hmm. not some crazy guy in red underwear with a pitchfork running around. He's actually the master of a high society ball mm-hmm. in Moscow. We're pretty diverse people, and to mm-hmm. me, that what we put in is diverse, so what comes out is diverse. So I don't know what the metric is, or if there's any perfect formula of, these two people, Devin Klebold and the other dude in Columbine, they were obsessed with Hitler and all these things. Well, I also know a lot of people that have done research into National Socialism and haven't gone on killing sprees. So
exactly.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think even at a minimum, if you can't put some sort of metric on exploring these topics and maybe even obsessing over it, maybe it just creates some sort of level of cynicism to your daily outlook.
Perhaps.
Because
it brings me, and I've referenced this very briefly before, but I'll bring it up again here. In my junior and senior year of high school, I was around a certain element, and I'm not picking on these individuals, I'm simply stating a historical fact, okay? So anybody that resents it, well, I'm sorry, you can perhaps search for some of these people and email them and ask them why they acted that way. But there were some evangelical Christian people, and they were young and immature, as was I, okay? But they had a massive problem with that in my own car, and I didn't have a subwoofer, I've never had one, so I didn't have incredibly high volumes with which to play music. But sitting in the church parking lot at a debate tournament, that's where we were hosting the tournament, but I, a number of times, had one because I played piano and I attempted to sing like him, but never had the range of one Elton John. And this was a number of instances where this made me a massive cultural target for these individuals because, of course, you know, Elton John is a homosexual. Mm-hmm. Well, little of these individuals know, his lyrics were written by Bernie Taupin, who's been married to four different women, very much straight, and Elton John writes the music. He's never been a lyricist, but that's besides the point. It was as if, because I listened to Elton John, I'm not sure what they were attempting to say more. I was castigated because of, you know, various, I'm sure, innocent daughters that I talked to. So I don't guess they were trying to say the music was going to make me gay. But perhaps the greater point was that somehow, by extension, I was promoting homosexuality, which is obviously absurd.
Yes.
But that's the sort of criticism that was levied. And I'm not, again, I'm not picking on evangelical Christians, but this is just an example, mm-hmm. perhaps, that I don't know what the metric is there, because anybody that knows me well or not so well can probably tell you that I kind of like girls.
Well, okay? I think even beyond that, when you bring up that story, that it doesn't just necessarily fall in line with some sort of dark side of human nature. I think that the pendulum can swing the other way, where one side that is doing something as harmless, like yourself listening to Elton John, becomes frustrated with the fact that even though someone is trying to push themselves and align themselves with something like religion that is supposed to have this pure moral compass for you to follow, that even by following that to an extreme, when you come out into the real world, you're sort of ostracizing harmless habits and harmless likes and harmless entertainment bits that in a sense ostracize you and get you frustrated, and that just does nothing for the overall conversation.
Here's what it did for the conversation. Okay, now I started playing piano when I was 6, and these stories were when I was 17 and 18 years old. Now I don't play anymore, I don't play very well anymore because, you know, some injuries I've had to my right arm. But the point is, I played for well over 2 decades. But at this time, this event, and one of the times I was listening to the song Tiny Dancer, the other time I was listening to a song called I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's ever listened to Elton John knows it's pretty damned harmless material. But it leads me to a thought. Up until that time, I became a freshman in college and met some people at a secular school that had no frame of reference for this sort of dialogue, who, up until that time, I hadn't really listened to a whole lot of Led Zeppelin, for instance. Well, these guys were saying to Vinny, jam with us and do the vocals on this. And ironically, it was this sort of vitriolic criticism that made me embrace a heretofore unlistened to band in my life. And it brings me to the point, let art be art, okay? I'm not talking about saying, let's have obscene pornographic drawings on the wall for every child to see. But when it comes to someone's personal musical taste, this vitriolic criticism levied against my person by these, I don't think they were well-meaning, but we'll say perhaps at times well-meaning evangelical Christians, they had the exact opposite effect. Whatever they were trying to do, if it was trying to make me go, you know what, guys, you're absolutely right, they did the exact opposite, because one of them, actually, it was somebody's parent that criticized me, you know, about listening to that in my car, and I looked at him and I said, sir, with all due respect, this is my father's car.
Yeah, right.
He knows I listen to Elton John. He actually, my grandmother bought me the record that I was playing at the time, you know. So it drives me to this, and I'm going, let art be art at times, okay? Sometimes, as Sigmund Freud said, a cigar is just a cigar. Mm-hmm. Well, so it leads me this, I believe I told you about this. This is last week. Maybe I didn't, but I was reading this music review, our musical blog, by one of the Duggards. You know that crew?
Yep.
And it was actually a fairly decently written musical review of the greater career as a whole of Led Zeppelin. And, you know, it of course delineated into, and they were hailing Satan and all this, but I was even getting through that until the very end of this segment on Jimmy Page, where this supposed Christian remarks, but even the devil couldn't save this hack's alleged guitar skills. And I went, okay. Now, I don't care where you hail from. I don't care what God you claim to worship. Anybody that suggests that Jimmy Page was anything less than one of the greatest people, is one of the greatest people ever to touch a guitar, is either A, ignorant, or B, selling something.
Exactly.
And I think we know which category this is in.
Exactly.
Bringing full circle, okay, art is just art, and these are fellow Christians, the supposed Christians that I'm addressing here, but I feel like it's probably better for them to hear this from me than some other members of the staff, that have no religious background whatsoever. And I could say this is not only embarrassing as a Christian, because there's nothing, you know, you hear these things in the Bible, or not the Bible, excuse me, people ascribing motive to it about rock music and all these other things that's nowhere there written. So you're making yourself and the religion itself look bad, and it's distorting the issue.
Exactly.
What we need to be talking about here is, like you said, and that's where I want you to take this and for the final few segments here, wrap this up, but it really is changing the issue, and it's driving moderate Christians such as myself away.
Mm-hmm.
It's making me go, okay, you know what? I've listened to, and in fact, have at one point or another owned every single Led Zeppelin album. No, playing Stairway to Heaven backwards, I've done it, does not contain, it's some really weird, just
bizarre
gibberish.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've listened to Dark Side of the Moon while watching The Wizard of Oz, and all these different things. I own, I think, 22, 23 Elton John albums, about the same amount of Rolling Stones albums. And I look at it this way. When I go to church, when I go to Mass, I want to hear the liturgy, and I want to participate in an old style mode of worship, okay? If I want to hear a rock band, I'm going to go to a rock concert. Whereas these Christians that attempt to be all things to all people look very foolish when they attempt to juxtapose those things.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think you bring up a good point when you say, of course, we picked on, you know, video gamers and record listeners, rock and roll listeners, and rap, hip hop connoisseurs. But there is something to be noted when we discuss the idea of almost like this tribal sheltered state, or rather it's almost like identity politics, but it's identity culture. And the more that you become wrapped up in that and sheltered, when you are released into what is the real world, I mean, you can make this analogy for anything. Let's talk about liberal college campuses in the Ivy Leagues, like Brown University, where you create these environments where you can be triggered by something, or we need safe spaces, or this kind of speech is not supposed to be warranted on our campus. When you do go out into the real world and you're exposed to normality that is the United States, or the culture in the country that you're in, the state you're in, the city you're in, that you, because of the sheltered nature that you have had, whether that's, you know, religious or not religious or whatever it is, to just go and attack the individual for his likes, the art that he likes, or the life that he lives, and attack that core, that foundation that person has, that's probably not that dissimilar to the core foundation that you would have with it, whatever group you came from, is just devastating to the overall conversation. And you can't take it serious. I mean, I think that's what happened with you. You have these individuals who are calling you out for something that is completely normalized within...
Yeah, I'm not making you ride my car.
Exactly. And to then... instead of having the conversation, hey, I believe this
and then why are you listening to Elton John?
Why are you listening to it? I believe that by this, and this, it is immoral, or I shouldn't be listening to it. Well, that's fine. You can get out of my car. That's not a big deal. We can go on and be friends, and you have
your
beliefs.
Or just, in this case, keep walking by my car.
Or keep walking by your car.
They weren't even in it.
Exactly. But to engage you at some sort of fundamental level for the things that you like based on the culture that you came from is inherently devastating to the overall...
It killed any hope of dialogue, because, again, this was in South Mississippi, and I'm not picking on South Mississippi. There's a lot of fine people that live there, and that I'm friends with.
But it could happen anywhere. It could happen.
Good.
I mean, you pick the place. You pick the country.
I happen to come from New Orleans, where, as I said before, and you know this, I'll say it again, if you can't get along with other groups of people, this is not the city for you.
No, absolutely not.
And so that's where I came from, and any hope we might have had for a, hey man, why do you think listening to that's okay, went straight out the window, because it's like, well, what are you trying to say? I mean, one of the guys knew, you know, I didn't want to remind him of this, but I'm dating your sister, so I know it can't be my sexuality. So what is it you're trying to say here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was bizarre, And it leads into this whole thing. Like you said, it destroys dialogue as a whole. And again, I am a Christian. Yes, I'm a Catholic, but it's a denomination of the Christian faith. We have historically made ourselves look very bad the last few decades, because it seems to be a lot of Christians are always harping on the, we don't want government overreach when it comes to controlling our groundwater or subsidizing farmers, but this idea we need to subsidize the bad or censor the bad entertainment material in society. Well, who's going to decide that?
Exactly.
What if they decide Kirk Cameron's Left Behind movie's bad? What if they don't want the Bible read anymore? You ever thought about that?
I mean, it goes both ways.
Absolutely. It's asinine, and it's always, it's like the quote by Mahatma Gandhi. I've said this before on here, but he said, I love your Christ, but I despise your Christians. Your Christians are so very unlike your Christ.
Yeah, and look, in all fairness, if you want to come from a guy that's center left that doesn't really hold any religious beliefs, it's the same way that a atheist or a very strong agnostic individual would then attack someone's foundation for what they believe in their religiosity. So it goes both ways, and I can even pick on myself here by engaging in a conversation with someone who believes in the origin of mankind based on a biblical sense. And there's two ways to engage an individual. One, you can hit them at their core and dissolve the entire conversation. Or you can ask and you can question and you can respectfully have a conversation about these type of things. So it goes both ways, and I'll say that any atheist or agnostic that perpetuates some sort of conversation that ends when it starts is not doing any good for the overall conversation or narrative.
No, but I will say this in the interest of full disclosure and fairness here. I'm socially liberal, and I'm a fiscal hawk. I think, as I've said before, the fiscal issues of our federal government specifically need to be addressed, or a lot of these other issues, believe it or not, are not going to matter because we're not going to have a framework with which to address them. But I feel like it's fair to say I'm pretty socially liberal, okay?
Yeah.
But I've had people in the media, for the most part, that it's, as you just said, the conversation's over before it even starts, because they assume all these things about me that I think it's fair to say they would be pleasantly surprised upon engaging me in conversation about these matters. But I can't really help that. But as an individual, with one of my brother-in-laws who, he says he's an atheist, he's not, he's agnostic, okay, because he doesn't believe in something as absurd as matter coming from nothing, okay, and I'll leave, that's my only or.
All right.
I dip into that issue.
All right.
But you're not an atheist either, you're more or less agnostic, okay, so with that though, the agnostics or even atheists, because I've known a couple, it's actually, when you get down to it, very difficult to find an atheist. Most of them are mislabeling themselves, they're agnostics, But the point is, I've been on the receiving end of a lot less vitriol from those individuals than I have had Christians who do not think that I don't live A through Z. And I'll remind these individuals that Jesus Christ had all of zero words to say about homosexuals, for instance. And beyond that, when it came to the nephew that I'm godfather of and my brother's three sons, for instance, there are a lot, Jeremy and his husband, okay, I would far more trust my nephews and my godson with them than I would a lot of so-called religious people in this country, not just to pick on Christians.
And I think that's I don't mean to cut you off.
I think that's a very striking point. No, please take over. It's a very striking.
First off, from someone who is a professed Catholic, and I think that's a strong point to make. And I think when it comes to the agnostic atheist side, whether it's atheism or agnosticism,
I don't mean that offensively.
No, not at all. But I think that there is this idea within that framework of belief or ideology, whatever you want to call it, that allows for a little bit more flexibility when it comes to where your beliefs and philosophical foundation comes from. So, you know, it's essentially, I don't care, as an agnostic, I don't care where you gather your beliefs from. In fact, I don't care that you are against homosexual marriage. Not you, of course, but, you know, for Christians, you know, I don't care where your belief is, but we can all agree that we have a relatively similar moral standard in which we hold ourselves to.
Oh no. Let's remember Saint Teddy, Ted Cruz would tell you that, no, you feel that way, then you don't love the Constitution and that's, you cheered when Jesus died.
But that's the thing though. Even though I would profess that and say that, the other side will come back and say, absolutely not. And so it's a non-starter in a conversation where it's like, look, I think there's a lot of